Okay, now we're going to hear Dennis and Ronica's experience on steps 8 and 9.
Good evening. Hello again. Great to see everybody. Ronica, alcoholic. Hi. I know I've said this a few times, so... So after we're on 8 and 9, making a list and making amends. So when I got done my step 5, that afternoon I went home and spent that hour, which was really peaceful. And I really felt untouchable at that point, just emptied out completely. And I think I can still remember that peace, and I'm always wanting to get it. And somebody said to me one time, that if you're struggling at any point, how are your amends going? Because if you work on your amends, you'll get that peace back, right? And that's kind of stayed with me. Because I did all that work so that I could see about the past, and now I have an opportunity. I can't erase the past, but I can kind of help it heal and transform and to be useful, right? So when I got to this point, that was Saturday that I finished my 6 and 7. And then I sat down Sunday morning and started to make a list, which I had when I made my inventory. Because my sponsor said my sponsor basically stuck to the book and never said to me, she never said, she never told me stuff to do that wasn't in the book. But there was one thing she said, listen, this isn't in the book and you can do it or not. And this is something I did when I was reading my 5th step. She said, I brought a highlighter. And as I was reading, if there was somebody's name that I thought or knew that I owned an amends to, I would just put a highlighter and then, you know, would give me an opportunity, make it a little bit easier when I went back. So in reality, I know from a lot of my mentors that I have had an opportunity, like sitting in meetings like this, I've learned a lot, and they have shared a lot of their experience, has helped me. In reality, I owe a living amends to probably the world, right? I don't mean to, like, I'm gonna fly over to China and go to make, hey, I owe you amends. But it's more like I spent so many years of just taking from the energy of the earth and depleting that positiveness by my behavior, that I need to be aware of that and look at just trying to give back with regardless of what I'm doing, right? And so I went through the list, which I had, and I started pulling off people that I owed amends to. And I would jot down a couple of sentences or something if I, you know, just to give me clarity. So I met with my sponsor that very next day after 6 and 7. And I had a good size list going. And we talked about a few, because there were a few I was visiting from Florida up here. And there was some that I wanted to tackle while I was up here. So the first one was my mom's grave. And, you know, so that's not that... It's somewhat easy because she's not alive and I'm not going to hear anything. But it was also very, very emotional. But there were a few other people that I needed to see in the next couple of days. And we discussed what I was going to say. And she helped me kind of formulate looking at my self-seeking. Because my self-seeking is really the roadmap of, like, what I, you know, I'm not going to walk up to somebody and say, oh, I used to think you were a jerk. But... if I gave them the attitude all the time, I wasn't going to go also and say, well, I used to think you were a jerk, so I would go up and say, you know, I gave you attitude all the time, and that was, you didn't deserve that. You know, I was wrong to be so rude to you and dismissive, you know, something like that, right? So she helped me kind of formulate, and I will say that the early amends were sometimes... maybe a little bumpier, right? Only because I wasn't as, I was getting grounded, but I, you know, it was just stuff for me to really form and verbalize. So the ones that I started, those couple ones, they were some family members, my mom at the grave. Oh, so this is a really good story. So I go to make the amends at my mom's grave, right? I know I'm all over the place, but... So I have a rental car, and it's snowy, and it's yucky outside. So I make the amends at the grave, and as I'm leaving, there's a stone corner at the corner, and I hit it with part of the bumper, and I rip part of the bumper off, right? Just a little bit, not the bumper, but it is a tear. So instantly, it's snowy, and the car's a mess because it's got, you know, mud and sleet, and I'm like, first thought, I might be able to hide this from the rental car agency. This is a day after I've now finished reading a week of dumping myself, right? And the next thought is, you need to trust God about this one. So I did call. My credit card covered the $500 for the deductible, and I show up at the airport to return it, and the guy's checking me out, and he doesn't notice it. So now it's the second shot, because once he checks me out and the car's back in, technically I'm off the hook, right? He's checking me out, and he's like, okay, going to give me the slip. I go, no, there's a dent over there. Really? Oh, man, thank you for telling me. You got to go inside, but I would have gotten in trouble. I go, hey, no problem. But, you know, because the old me is like, oh, I got to get out of this. So I actually did learn something from all that reading and writing, right? It was really emotional to talk to my mom and talk about the things that I regretted doing and how I alienated her and didn't allow her to be my mom or to do things with me and blamed her for things that had nothing, that she had nothing to do with. And, you know, even though she couldn't talk back and say to me how she felt or things that I didn't realize I did, you know, it was very healing. So I went on to do, I don't know, 5 or 6 while I was still in Massachusetts the next couple of days. And then I flew home and I had a list. So my sister was one of them. Although I can't tell somebody they're an alcoholic, I got a pretty good idea who is, right? Because I knew nobody could tell me that I had a problem because I wasn't going to listen. But that's not to say that people who were watching me suffer and struggle and destruct didn't know why. So my sister was one of us. And I also knew I'd made amends to our cousin. So I knew they were on the bat phone together because they were like thick as thieves, right? The peas in the pod. So I knew she was on the bat phone. So when I get home, I say to my sister, you know, I'd really like to talk to you and about the past. And, you know, and she's like, okay, right? So I know she's all stressed out about it, right? She's, you know, what am I going to bring up and blame her for? So the first thing I do is I ask people their permission to make amends. I just don't show up. Now, if I'm in the airport and, you know, wherever, you know, Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I run across somebody I haven't seen in 15 years, I'm not going to say, hey, can I have an appointment to see you next, you know, whenever? But I ask them if I can have a few minutes of their time, right? And those things have happened to me. I have run into people in the strangest places, just passing time, and I've asked them. And people just show up when it's time to make amends. It's like, you know, people I haven't even thought of, and like, whoa, okay. So, and I have one experience where I ran into somebody early on in the airport, and I didn't make amends to him, and I need to go find him, you know, and I think about it, and I gotta find him. So, I asked my sister, you know, about making amends, and I don't know who brought the idea of going to the beach. And that's probably a good thing to do, right? So we get there. I'm telling you, she is in her beach chair. And she is holding on like she's in the dentist chair and she's getting drilled in the mouth with no pain medicine, right? So I'm praying. I pray. I kind of try to feel the situation out, and I'm not going to make somebody go through a bunch of stuff if it's really, they're really, really not wanting to, right? But I asked her permission, and I started talking about things and, you know, talking about the things that I did that were wrong. And I really believe she was waiting for me to blame her for some stuff. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I, you know, she was just like, I'm telling you, she sat there like this the whole time, eyes straight ahead, couldn't look at me, you know, and I was gentle, and I just said, you know, I know you loved me, and I did things, and I wouldn't let you be my sister, and I really regret that, you know, just think, you know, that, and stuff that I did, you know, stupid things like I broke the phone and I lied to you about, you know, specific things, but also other things that I did to hurt her and to cause problems. But this one I went in pretty quick because she, it's okay, we're fine. And I was just like, I just, you know, it would be okay if I fit, you know. So I said the things I need to say, and I said, you know, is there anything you want to talk about or anything that I didn't mention? Nope. You know, and then she's like, 5 minutes later, we're at the beach, and then she's like, okay, gotta go. You know, so, but I spent the rest of her life trying to be a better sister, and I failed tremendously many times. She got, her husband died really quick. He had some heart condition, and he was getting well, and I think there was some problems that the hospital didn't catch, and he was really doing well, and then, boom, one night, I'm out of town working, and she calls me, and the ambulance is there, because his heart's failing, he's having congestive heart failure. So he never regained consciousness, and he was on kidney dialysis, and the doctors were like, he's, you know, we're not going to be able to bring him back. I stood by her, and I told her that I had her, and whatever she needed. And there were a lot of some other family members that weren't so healthy, and she really didn't have a lot of strength to deal with some of this stuff. I was like, I got it. You tell me how I can help you. They can go through me. I'll take care of it. You know, and any decision she had with the doctors, she asked me to be there. When they had to send him to hospice and he passed, I was there. And of course, there were some family members, there were some issues, you know, with the minutes. Sometimes people don't, when there's death and there's money or items involved, sometimes people don't act so thoughtful. So I was like, I'll take care of this. And, you know, that was one of the best things I could do to help her, right, during this time. And then 9 months later, she was diagnosed with lung cancer. And she doesn't have any kids, so there were a few things that I wish I had been more attentive and more available when she was, you know, going through some of her chemo and a little bit more responsible. But that living amends, right? Like, the words I said to her were a good place to start, but following it up with, I'm trying to be a different person, and I'm going to try to do better and be better, and if there's things that I can do that are helpful to you, please let me know, right? So I don't even know why I'm telling you the story. So this was just part of the amends. She was fine, and she came up here for the last Christmas, and I was going to surprise her up here, and then she ended up going to the hospital in New Bedford. And they were able to do some quick stuff to get her out of the hospital. We had the Christmas, we got her home, but she never really recovered. The next couple of weeks, she would not pass away. So I get her into we finally get her into West Palm Beach Hospital, and she's not doing well. She has to keep having her stomach tapped, right? I'm like, I got this. What do you need? I want to go home. I don't want to be here. God was in this one. So I start making the arrangements with hospice, right? She's supposed to leave the next morning, come back in the hospital. Her liver has stopped working, so she's extended and she needs to get drained. And they're like, and the doctor, the nurse is like, I'm like, she can't go home. And the nurse is like, well, I said, we need to get her tapped again. And there just happened to be some random doctor on the ward. And he was standing back there, and the nurse is like, well, I don't know about that. I said, I'm trying to get her home so she can die at home. And the doctor goes, get it done now. He calls up, he gets her done. So at this point, hospice is canceled because she had an appointment and the nurse needed to be home. God worked for me the whole entire day to get the nurse back, to get the hospice back, the social workers, the caseworkers. She's like, I don't know what you did. I said, was it me? She goes, I don't know who you know. And I'm thinking to myself, it's God. Right? And so my sister's laying there, and I'm like, I'm going to get you home. And the ambulance people to transport come walking in. She goes, oh, now where am I going? I'm like, we're going home. And she's like, really? And she perked up. I get a picture. I'm like, I'm driving with you in the ambulance. I get a picture of her in the ambulance, right, and me. And she's like, are you kidding me? I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to post this everywhere. She goes, oh, my hair looks a mess. But I got her home, and we were there with her. And her, she got to have her little dog with her, and she got to pass in peace, right? And so how many times, because, oh, this is so much work and this is so hard on me, but God was able to remove that, because I, this living amends of, I'm going to just try to be a better person and do what I can to help somebody. So, you know, I'd hear people sometimes in meetings like, oh, the biggest amend I owe is to myself. Yeah, I'm not down with that one. Not at all. Okay, this writing is an amend to me and God that I am going to free myself of this stuff, you know, this, oh, I owe myself the amends first. I'm like, out. So by doing the amends and doing the work to understand how I cause disharmony in other people's lives and hurt and pain, and to be able to go back and correct it. And I had a lot of good teachers who helped me with the language. I was wrong. I regret. You didn't deserve none of this. Well, I was having a bad day, or if you hadn't of, or but, because that was how it always was. I'm sorry, but I didn't do, but. So my brother, on the other hand, oh, that was a hard one. And he laid into me for like an hour of all this stuff. And of course, I'm expecting that he's going to come back and say, well, you know, you, yeah, you did this and this, but, you know, I did that. Not one thing did he take responsibility for. And I sat there and took it. And I didn't feel good for a couple of days, but then I was okay. I was like, and we actually started to have a relationship, him and I. So, you know, there's been a lot of them that I've made. I've showed up with cash. Lucky used to say that one. Show up with cash. He goes, it's not your money they want. It's their money they want back. And guess what? They know it's their money. So men might not have some of the problem that get away with some of the stuff that us women can get away with, but... And I'm going to be the first to acknowledge that for you men. So sometimes with men that I owed money to, you know, they want to be like, oh, no, it's, everybody wants their money back. Okay? They always want their money back. So I got the perfect line, because it's not my money. And if it means I'm not going to have a good life if I hold on to this cash, because I want cash. Cash is the answer. It's going to make me happy, right? I go up to people and I go, so I need to make amends to you. I make the amends, and then I say, you know, I stole this money from you, or I was in, whatever. And, oh, no, no, no. I go, but listen, I need you to take this money because my recovery depends upon it. And if you don't, I might drink again. Because, you know, they won't, I mean, and Lucky would say this, he'd go, they want the money. They just don't want to look bad or feel bad or whatever. And maybe that it's not, it doesn't make any difference if that's true or not. It's their money. It was never my money. So I've done that several times, and they've cashed the checks. I try to show up with cash when I can. You know, I had a woman that I worked for as a bartender, and I gave away a bunch of free drinks so I could, you know, be popular and get better tips. And I saw her at the airport one time, and I had money in my pocket, and I went up to her to make amends, and she's like, I'm not taking that money. I'm like, please. I might, I use the whole, nope. I said, just, why don't you give it to a charity if you want? Nope, you give it to a charity. She would not take it. But nobody's ever made amends to her before. And so from that point forward, like, she, I could, whatever, she was always there for me, right? She said, no, you give it to a charity. So we happened to be doing a Big Book Step City convention in St. Augustine that year. So I took all the money and put it for scholarships so that people could come to the convention, right? So, you know, I know I haven't really touched on the book part of it, but it's telling me, you know, my real purpose is to fit myself to be a maximum service of God. So as long as there's stuff blocking me off, and I didn't want to go tell people that I was wrong or I hurt them. You know, the lie was they don't know. And if they know, then they're going to reject me. But guess what? Most people know. And so I've got this little, like, I don't walk up to somebody, oh, hey, yeah, I slept with your husband, right? But if I don't think people know, like, when I was gossiping or doing things that were kind of on the sly or whatever, I make the amends, and then I ask them, you know, is there anything that you'd like to talk about? Is there anything that I've done that I'm not mentioning because I don't remember, if there's something that's really important to you or anything, to give them that opportunity. So the, you know, and a few times, you know, people are, well, yeah, you know, you know what, you're right. But because I don't want to just go and say hurtful things to them. I'm not trying to avoid it, but my whole thing is I'm not supposed to cause more harm. And like I told you, I had that amends that I had to wait 10 years. This is a great story. So I had to wait 10 years, right? So I come into town, back into Massachusetts, and I'm still kind of, I'd made amends to the old boyfriend, and we were on good terms. And he had someone else in his, and we were just good friends, right? I'd help him with stuff. I actually got him to go to Big Book Step Study, and he did the work, and, you know, and the woman that he was seeing, she yet came. So this whole trail of, so I come into town, and I want to see his sister, and he's like, she's back in town. She used to be a really successful realtor. Now she's working at some bar, and, you know, she's hanging out with this guy that's not a bad guy, but, you know, just, you know, she's, you know, older, and she's just really struggling. Unbeknownst to me, I'm thinking she's not answering my letters and doesn't want anything to do with it. Well, she imploded her life. She might as well have had the entreatism, right? Imploded her life, left her husband, sold her house, went out with some guy who took her for all her money. Now she's back in town. So I go, do you think she'd, you know, so he texts her, whatever. And so I go by the bar where she's working, manager, and, you know, they're all doing coke in the back. And she's like, I don't know what it's a rough bar. It's, I don't know what I'm doing here. So I'm like, would you like to go to, could we go to lunch? And she goes, that would be really nice. So we make a lunch date. Next day, his mother, who was another one that I railroaded or whatever you want, who's, you know, we were always at odds because I was with her baby boy and nobody was ever good enough for him, right? This is according to, that's what I'm thinking, she's thinking. So she's in this small claims lawsuit and she won't settle. So I actually call him up to something I had to ask him about. He goes, I'm like, where are you? He goes, oh my God, I'm in this mediation with my mother and she won't settle. He goes, do you think you can come over here and talk to her? Because she knows I'm a lawyer. I'm like, okay. You know, because I owe amends, right? This is not like, this is part of this trying to help and be helpful and be a demonstration that I'm a different person. You know, where I'm up here only for a few days. I got a million things I want to do. I don't want to go sit in some mediation with some old lady who's, you know, stubborn as you can't believe. I go, okay. So I come in and you can, the lawyers are like, and she's like, you know, because she probably wants another $5, whatever it is, right? So I go, hi, Mimi, how you doing? Oh, Veronica, it's nice to see you. What are you doing here? I said, oh, I just came over to see if I can help or whatever, right? So I send the lawyers out. So we sit down, and her son and I sit, and I go, what's going on? So I listen a couple minutes to what she's looking for. You know, and I'm looking at, it's not a lot, a couple $1,000, right? And I know where they're going to end up, right in the middle, because they... maybe $5, you know, 10. So she looks at me and she goes, yeah, they want me to settle. And I'm looking at her and she goes, well, what do you think? And so I explain this to her and I explain that to her and I give her this number. I said, that's probably about where you need to. She goes, you think I should settle for that? Yeah, I do. Settle. Jimmy's like, thank you. Right? So that night, I go over to her house. She's got herself in all kinds of credit card hawk. They're calling every 5 seconds, harassing her, and he's like, I don't know what to do. I go, give me those phones. So I call every one of those creditors and say, I am taking away your phone privileges. If you want to contact this woman, you need to write her a letter. Goodbye. Click. He's like, wow. So I want to say make amends to her, right? So she's, no, dear, you're fine. Because now she's really doesn't like his soon-to-be ex-wife, right? Because now I'm the angel. But the whole thing, then the next day I have lunch with the daughter. So we sit down and I start to make amends to her and she starts bawling. about how bad she treated me. And I was, no, you didn't. I was so wrong to try to drag you into the middle of this. So she, we're talking, so I was wrong, you know. So I start telling him, I'm like, why are you working in Spark? Because I can't do anything. I go, you were a fabulous realtor. Oh, I blew all that. I go, no, you did not. My license is, it's long. I go back. And we talked, and I'm like, no, you can do it. You were fabulous. So what? You had to start over. So 3 months later in Florida, I get a postcard with her picture, and it's got her new realtor's picture on it. And on the back, she says, thank you, I'm back in the biz. Right? I did not force myself on that family like I wanted to, because the amends is not about me feeling better. It's about me trying to heal the past and make a demonstration of healing the past. And I was able to be of maximum service to that family. And I can tell you, I could call any one of them anywhere if I needed help, and they would help me. Right? So I just want to give you the last amends that I made was, not the last one, but this is one that I think is just poignant of how I operated. Right, so I'm at work, sober, of course. A lot of these really yucky amends that I had to make. I wasn't fortunate that I walked into Big Book Step Study the day I got sober, so I was still making crazy amends while crazy was still harming people while I was sober. Let's say dry. Dry and wounded and angry and miserable. So, and full of fear. So I'm working. And at the time when I was working for the company I was working for, a lot of the employment was freelance, right? So if the managers like you, they would hire you. So we were doing different sporting events. So they hired this woman that had been working as an assistant. Now they're going to make her a production manager, right? Like me. But we all get assignments based on if they like us or not, right? Well, I am now, my fear is off the charts that she's going to take away my jobs. They're going to like her better than me. I don't even know I'm thinking this. And then I start torturing this person, somebody I was friends with, and now I'm rolling her under the bus. And it was that lying in wait, right? I'm waiting to point out her faults. So if someone said, someone didn't call the trailer people to come fix the air conditioning, and I would be like, well, I think Rachel was supposed to do that, right? And it was awful. Fast forward, finish the writing, do all this stuff, I'm making amends. Years, she's gone. I have no idea where she is, right? Well, in California, working an event. And my friend, who is friends with her, and I'm not really kind of paying attention that they're friends. Oh, I'm having dinner with so-and-so. Do you want to go? Nope. And I'm like, yes. So we're sitting at dinner. I'm in the bathroom every 5 minutes praying. Okay, God, help me. How am I going to make this amends? You know, I'm going to get over my chicken parm. I'm going to be like, hey, can I make amends to you? So we get done with the dinner. I'm a nervous wreck. I've prayed like 20 times about this. How am I going to talk to her? So we start to walk off. And I don't know if I'm ever going to see her again. So I say to my other friend, hey, can I talk to her for a couple minutes? And she's walking off the other direction. She goes, yeah, I'll meet you downstairs. So I grab her and she comes back. And I said, can I talk to you for a couple minutes? She goes, yeah, sure. I start to tell her the things that I did to her, right? And she starts bawling. And she's like, oh, thank you so much, because I've spent all these years wondering what I did to make you hate me. That's what this sick alcoholic does, makes other people feel like it's their fault, or I work on trying to do that. So, we didn't become best friends, but we were friendly. And then, I told her if there's anything I could do to help her or anything that she needed from me. And a couple of times she called me for some references and to try to help her get some work. And I did what I could to help her. But that's the stuff I would do. Because I was all so fearful of what I wasn't going to get or what you were going to steal from me. Or, convince myself I was justified, that I would just run people over and not even know it. So this is a healing process, the gift that I could actually see the truth about myself and have the courage with God to go up to other people and admit to them what I did was wrong and face them. And even if somebody didn't want to talk to me, I can still hold my head up high. I used to see somebody in the supermarket, and if it was somebody I didn't want to see, go down the other aisle, cross the street, slink down in my car. But I don't do that. I don't have to live like that anymore. And I can't tell you how many people have said to me, even especially people in AA, nobody's ever made amends to me before. You're the first one. I'm like, oh, well, you deserve to know that I was wrong, and I appreciate you listening. And that's what I say, you know? So wherever you are, and I've been saying this a lot, but if you're not at this point right now, it's okay. When I was writing, I couldn't even look at step 9. My sponsor would say, what step are we on? Where are we? And I couldn't even look at that because it would be enough for me to get overwhelmed and be like, you know, I'm never going to make it there. And once I got to this point, as much as some of them were hard and I wasn't eager to go out and find some of these people, I was willing. And that is the amends to myself, is because every time I make those amends, I clear up one more little piece of the puzzle that's standing between me and God. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my buddy.
Good evening, everybody. Dennis Alcoholic again. Good to be here. Nice dinner. That was nice, peaceful dinner, and good to be here. And my experience with step 8 and 9, by the way, if you can't hear me, just raise your hand, yell out. We're all friends here. No one's getting their feelings. I'm not going to get my feelings hurt, that's for sure. So I guess when I just come off doing my steps 6 and 7, and I felt pretty amazing after that, honestly. And then it was time to make a list, and in the book, I'm going to read actually step 9, made direct amends to such people possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And so what I did, the exact same thing. I got my 4-step out. I took a highlighter. My instructions are pretty simple. I actually met Dale at the golf shop. He worked at a place called Ocean Edge Golf Shop. And I took my highlighter out. We said a prayer together. He said, I want you to go through this 4-step and highlight anybody that you know 100% you owe a direct amends to. And that's what I did. I got on my knees. I said 3rd-step prayer, 7th-step prayer. Ask God to reveal, just like I did on my list, reveal the people that I'm resentful at. I said, just help me reveal the people that I owe a direct amends to. Now, that's what I did. I got up, I highlighted, went through every single name, and that was it. I looked at it very simply like that. After that, Dale sat with me. We went through my entire list, and he kind of looked it over. Now, he had just heard my 5th step, obviously. So he's certainly, with the amount of people that I had, he's probably not familiar with every single one. But I'm sure he's in his head listening, going, well, he owes that person a direct amends. And then I talked to him about the people that I'd highlighted. He asked me what the injury was. He asked me, you know, and he kind of said, well, what would you say to him? You know, I mean, just kidding. He didn't want to see me cause any more harm. And that's basically what we discussed with each person. So I went through my entire list. We stayed at that golf shop till it was done. And it wasn't like we did half and we're going to come back. We stayed there, went through the entire thing. And then I got this other bit of news from him, which I was like, as soon as he said this to me, I was in shock. I was like, all right, so we're looking pretty good. I know who I have to do amends to. He goes, well, here's the other part of that. And I said, what's the other part? Like, I thought I knew everything, you know. And he goes, so every single person on your list, you owe an amend to. And I'm like, what? I'm like, are you? I almost fell over. I'm like, how's this ever going to be accomplished? He goes, but not all of them are a direct amend. So you're going to start making amends tonight. When you get home, like I've mentioned many times, the first name on my list, I owed him a direct amend. But the person that I couldn't go see, I was to say one prayer a night and check that name off. And I would ask for forgiveness. And one thing that I'd also do on anybody that was on my list, if their name came up, this is just something I picked up. If their name came up in conversation, I'd try to say something positive about them. I didn't care. The resentment eventually was all gone. I realized the resentment literally had nothing to do with them, had everything to do with me. And I would try to say something nice if I believed it. You know, if I actually believed, I would say something nice about the person. So right off the bat, went home, said a prayer, and for this, whoever that was. And then I would check the name off the list. That was done. Then the instructions that were given to me. And these are probably the most important instructions that were given to me in step 9. And it was 2 amends a week, no excuses. I don't want to hear one word because, again, when alcoholics start feeling good, they start coming up with great ideas, their own program. Like, I have a sponsor for a reason. This guy knows a lot more than me. And, you know, we're going to start tweaking turnarounds. And I have the most amazing stories, which usually I don't comment. I go, oh, that's nice. And that wasn't the case with Dale. And whether I made 2 amends a week or not, I was to make 2 appointments. So these are the instructions I give my guys. So there's lots of different types of amends. There's direct amends, there's praying amends, financial amends, and graveside amends. And I broke them all down. With the financial amends, like, I figured this one out real quick. The IRS does not give a shit what step you're on. Trust me, they don't care. And Ronica said it best. They're not waiting for my money. They're waiting for their money. And there's another line in the book that was tweaked one night at the Men's Big Book in Hyannis over decades ago. We make the best deal we can. Well, my sponsor looked at me and he says, you're not making any deal. So there was a member that thought you're going to make the best deal. So if you owe $2,000, would you take $1,500? No, that's not how it works. So he goes, we're not talking about that. That doesn't, whatever you heard in that room tonight, block it out. That does not apply to you. You're not cutting deals with people. Like, you owe them the money, you're going to pay them the money. And that's it. And so what I did, this is what I did. When I called somebody up, I would call them on the phone and say, I'd like to sit down with you for a few minutes. If they said what it was about, I never said, I want to make direct amends to you and, you know, we're going to talk about the past and it's going to be uncomfortable. I just said, I just want a few minutes of your time. If you got it, that would be great. And whenever I made that appointment, I made sure that I was early because if you left it up to Dennis, it would be like a repeat performance, like I just show up an hour late, no big deal. Well, this is about change, you know what I mean? So I was to make the appointment, I was to show up early, and I was to look, when they showed up, I'd sit down, and I, after listening in that meeting, I listened to how this guy did it, or that guy did it. There actually was no co-ed meetings back then. And so my stuff came right out of that room, and I made my own little thing. And how that worked was, I'd sit down, I wouldn't look anywhere else, but directly into their eyes. Like, that was a specific instruction. There's no looking over here and over there and directly in their eyes. And I would say something like this. I'd say, I'm in a 12-step program. I never said I was sorry. I never said anything about AA, not one time. I was asked, are you in AA? I said, just in a 12-step program. There's a reason for that. If Dennis goes out and decides to go do a bunch of cocaine and have a big party, they would say, wow, that thing doesn't work. So I don't attach my amends to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was something I kind of came up with on my own. Of course, I heard it somewhere. I would look them in the eye and I would say, you know, I just have a few minutes of your time. I'm going to say a few things. I said, if you are uncomfortable and don't want to be here at any time, you can stop me. You can get up. You can leave. You can say whatever you want to me. I said, but when I'm done, then if you have any questions, you have something you think I missed, feel free. So like it says in the book, their mistakes and their faults were not to be discussed. And if I was going into an amend and I was angry at them before I even started, then forget about it. Like, cancel it. Because this is about everything, like Ronica just said. This is about forgiveness, and not just of. I'm not going in there to forgive them. There's nothing to do with it. It's, again, these are the things I'm supposed to do. Express regret. Like, the words are very, they're so clear in this. This is where there is direct words. Express regret. So I would express regret. Whatever the injury was, I made sure that it wasn't going to hurt them anymore. If that was the case, there was no direct amend made, period. If I'm out bad-mouthing somebody, some guy, to, for whatever reason, and he doesn't know, I'm not bringing it up. It's not going to happen. Obviously, if I knew, well, guess what? It's going to get talked about. If it's too uncomfortable for him, it was a couple of those that it was very uncomfortable, and I made it real clear. That's why I call it like a disclaimer. You want a way out, no problem. It's not a big deal. Some of the stuff, it's very uncomfortable. Not just for me, but for others. And express regret. I wouldn't ask for forgiveness, per se. I would I'd admit my fault, express regret, and then, God willing, this will never happen again. And those were the three, like, bullet points that I would talk about. And I kind of watched everybody's body language, how they were taking it. And then when those three things were met, and I didn't ever really ask them, will you forgive me? You know what I mean? That wasn't up to me. I just, again, touched on those three things. And when I did that, then it was like, it's up to you. You know, do you have anything else you want to say? So, for me, I started with my family. So right there was I'm talking about my siblings. So right there was 10 amends that I had to make right off the bat. When I sat down with my family, it wasn't a quick, hey, it's like, it was a lot more than just, those were the three bullet points, but it says that we sat down, I forget the exact words, and I've said it a million times, but this wasn't like a quick in and out. We sat, analyzed the past. That's what it was. And with my parents, I was probably a little over a year sober making a direct amends to my parents that, talk about, Irish Catholics communicate in different ways, trust me. It's not all this lovey, huggy kind of thing. My father never told me he loved me. That's number one. That's for a story for another day. And it's a great story. Anyways, so when I'm sitting down with my Irish Catholic parents and their little house on Bass River and their shamrock green carpet, like, it was just, it's uncharted waters. The only good news is that my brother John got sober before me and he'd already done it, so they kind of knew what was coming. And my mother's like, so how much money did you steal from me, Dennis? How much money is it? And I paid him, and she goes, and that's it? That's all? And I'm like, well, I can kick a few more bucks in if it's going to make you feel better. But yeah, to my recollection, I felt awful taking money from my stealing from my parents of all people. Like, you're taking it, and before you even touch it, you feel guilty. But you need it, so you take it anyways. Mm-hmm. But what that did was, with my parents, was, like I said, Alcoholics Anonymous changed them. And this is how it all started. It was looking them in the eye and realizing, like, they went to church, like I said, their answer was everything, but this is different. Like, now, no one had ever, besides my brother John, made direct amends to my parents for their behavior, I can tell you that. Never, ever did anybody in Ireland admit fault to anything. If anything, like, it was all the manipulation, the control. I'm going to make them, like, guilt. I fell down the stairs once, and my brother, after I was, like, really hurt. And he goes, what did you do wrong? You know, because I must have done something wrong, and God pushed me down the stairs. You know, that's how I grew up. And he was fooling around, but he was serious. You know, like, I don't know what you did, but it's kind of on you, obviously. Don't do it again. And this was a different basis. And when that amend was made to my parents, like, everything changed. Everything changed. They trusted me a lot, and like, in a much different way. But that was over a number of years. That was living amends. Like, that's the living amends. And then I made amends. So I just cleared, like, a little circle out. Like, so made amends to my mother and father. So that little spot in West Dennis, that was safe. Because there was a lot of people around town that I went like this. I could not look them in the eye. Then I did all my family. And if you think it's hard talking to your parents, then, you know, some of my brothers weren't, no offense. My brothers were in AA a little bit more open, but some of my other brothers, like, feelings? What? Wait a minute. No. We're not talking about feelings. We're not talking about making amends. Like, it's just the way we grew up, you know? And believe it or not, Alcoholics Anonymous changed them. And that's because a number of us went back and made direct amends to these people. But they were open to it. So I started clearing out this circle. Then it was, I go over with Dale, said, okay, here's the two appointments. I check in, tell him what the injury was, tell him what the fault was. And I just literally just went out and banged them out. And if you do, I don't care how many amends you have, if you're doing 2 a week, you're getting stuff done. Like, it's, you are on top of it. If you start thinking, you know, for me, if I thought, you know, something, I knew this outside stuff wasn't going to work. And I hate to say it, if you go make a direct amends, it is a spiritual high like none other. Like, all this work, I felt amazing. When I was knocking on doors and looking people in the eye and paying back the money, and what else, the money was the big thing, because I was like, so I got to pay this. How's this going to work? But what really happened was, is the more amends that I made financially, the more money that I made. And that is a fact. I've heard that in my responsible meeting time, and time again, and that's exactly what happened to me. I would pay the money and get a job here. I was like, wow, like, that's a demonstration. That's what it is. And after I started making these amends and feeling really good about myself, I did my family first. I did my fellows. And I love talking about this amend. So I used to say, I used to badmouth the men's big book group. Well, who wouldn't? Wouldn't a member badmouth their own group? Well, this guy did. And a big thing back then, if you could admit it, I went up to the chairperson and I said, listen, I'm on my ninth and I got to talk to the group. So, you know, at the end of the meeting, just give me a couple minutes. And the chairperson's like, no problem. I'll give you plenty of time. So they open the meeting and we're going to have a moment of silence, preamble. And the chairperson goes, before we start, Dennis has something to say to the meeting. I was like, wait a minute, this is supposed to come at the end. So long story short, I stood up in front of 100-some-odd guys who I really looked up to. And made a direct amends. And then there was the direct amends inside the group that I had to make. And I remember, it doesn't matter who, I'll never forget, this was the first time I looked at him, I followed those instructions, he knew that I didn't really care for him, and he said, so, my turn yet? And I go, yeah, sure, go ahead, have at it. He goes, so why did you do it? I want to hear, why would you say such bad? Like, bad things about me. Like, he did not care. But it was like a quiz. I'm like, wait. I said, no one's ever asked me questions about why. I was, like, stunned. And I'm like, you know, like, I'll never forget. I said, because my selfishness got involved. And I was scared. I was afraid. All these three things in my life made me afraid. And I talked bad about you because I felt bad about myself. But that was like an eye-opener. So, again, he's just another one of my teachers, and he was at our meeting on Thursday night and has always been a teacher. He's an unbelievable person, but those direct amends were, it was like uncharted waters of trusting in a higher power / God, you know. And for me, it really started, everything started to change when I did these things. And I would say for me, when I have a guy, you can always, it's the same thing. If he's not making amends, and I call my guys out on it. Like, if their behavior starts going backwards and they're not showing up the Thursday night, I'm on top of them. I'm like, where are we tonight? You know, like, are we back gambling? Are we, where are we? Out with the girlfriend? Things getting back together? You know, is that the answer tonight? So my sponsor was a little different. He would just give me enough rope, and I would come to him going, you're not going to believe what happened. And he'd say, oh, really? Wow. And there's an old saying, if you have a good sponsor, a relationship with your sponsor, this is my, I love saying this to my guys. I said, dude, I know what's coming in your mail before you get it. Like, I know your life sucks because I haven't seen you in a month at the Big Book meeting or any meeting for that matter. And, you know, it's like when one of my guys calls, he'll like, oh, you're not going to believe it. I go, so what's her name? That's the first, how did you know? Well, because we haven't talked about your nine step in quite some time. That's why. I know, because I've been there. I know how it feels. And I'll tell you what, for me, I once made that list and committed to do this work, I realized that I couldn't lead. It talks about leading with the chin, and I would lead with the chin more often than not and put myself in this position of thinking it was everybody else's fault. But this is when I got to this point, like, all that was gone. I know I don't like that, the word fault, but it was on me. Like, I created this mess, and little by little, I could go out and make some of this stuff right. And the other thing that I would like to say is, like, how can I make this right? That was another one of the last questions at the end. Is there something I can do to make this right? And that really completed the amend for me, and the most amazing things have happened as a result of making these amends. I remember right after I did my family, you know, after my horrific ordeal with the Massachusetts State Police and surrounding police stations, I had to go and make amends. You know, I had to go to the local fire department because literally you do amazing things when you're a blackout. But when I had to go back and face these guys, I didn't know who they were. I found out who they were. I made direct amends to them. I remember sitting down with the officer the night I got arrested. I'm in handcuffs in the hospital and get my face sewn up after this horrific car accident. And he's questioning me, and I'm like, I was awful. It was really bad. And just because this is what I was told. And then they put, like, this nurse in front of me, and I'm like, oh, do you want my phone number? Like, you know, this is what I used to look like. And I wouldn't tell them who I was, you know. And I wasn't actually driving my car, and I didn't have a license on me, so they had no idea who I was. But when I made amends to him, like, after that, even when I got sober, I used to give this guy the finger no matter what. I don't care if I was on my bike, you know. Like, I would give him the finger all the time. Now I'm going back into this police station, and I'm like, wow. There's no running and no hiding, and there's also one other thing in this police station that was famous. There was no cameras, let me tell you that. So to say I was nervous is an understatement, but when I looked this guy in the eye and I made direct amends to him, he said the same thing. No one has ever come in here. He goes, had the guts to come in here. I said, hey, this has nothing to do with me having courage or guts. This is me just trying to make something right. I created this complete mess. You were just doing your job, and I'm here to just try to make this right. And that the last thing he said, and he was very good with it. Another police department, not so much, but he was very good with it. And the last thing he said, he goes, "So is the finger waving gonna stop, or are you gonna use your whole hand when you wave to me?" I know him to this day. You know what I mean? Like, I still know that I've seen him. You know, and that's what it's all about. Like, if I ever saw him without making amends, I'm doing this. You know, I'll go look for food that I'll never eat. You know what I mean? I'll go anywhere else if I run into this guy in a grocery store, anywhere else. And now, what does it say? We can look the world into the eye, and that's what it's all about. I went back as far as I could. I went back to, I think, another amend that I had made to this kid who's in my neighborhood. And I'll never forget, the kids in the neighborhood said, well, you're going to have to beat this kid up. And I go, why? Well, because if you don't, we're going to beat you up and your brother's going to beat you up. So I was terrified, and I literally, for no reason, and we don't like him, you know, it's like, you know, get on the band. So it was ugly. It was not, and I had, you know, there was five brothers, so I didn't want to endure any of that. So I just did it, and I beat him up. And when I went back, to make amends to that kid. I would not go to that gas station because I knew he worked there. And then if he was on the list, I went in. And this is kind of like, I wouldn't say it's a big deal, but it's like the connect the dots again. I made direct amends to him. He was totally fine with it. And he lived in my brother John's neighborhood. And his son was getting bullied by all these kids at the bus stop. Well, sure enough, this kid that I had made amends to, he knew all the kids were bullying him. And that's, you know, it may not sound like a big deal, but, you know, this my brother's son's getting bullied and bullied and bullied. And it was affecting their whole house. So I just gave the kid a call. I said, could you, hey, listen, could you do me a favor? And I have this open relationship. I said, can you try to mend this situation and have these kids, like, lay off this kid? And, you know, because I didn't do the amends so he would do that, but that's what it opened up like a channel to be helpful to somebody else, to my brother, who I owe pretty much my whole sobriety to because he went through this process first. So it like completes the circle. You know, it completed the circle. All that stuff stopped and it, and the behavior changed. You know, they stopped bullying this kid. I mean, he, you know, he grew up to be a fine, fine young man. He's unbelievable kid. And, you know, he'll never know that. I wouldn't want him to know that, but that's how this works. This this works when everything else can fail. And it talks about this being a demonstration of goodwill, and I talk about it as this is what we're supposed to do. We have to be rid of this. And I know for me, the amends was difficult, to say the least. I when I looked at it, I said, this is something I definitely don't want to do. And if I had to choose probably a step not to do, that would probably be it. But for me, I know that, you know, it was probably one of the greatest times in my life and probably one of the greatest experiences because I did something that I just prayed and prayed and prayed. And through all that prayer and asking God for help, it cleared away that wreckage of the past that they talk about. So I could do what? Help other alcoholics. And the relationship with my parents, so what's the end result of all this? You know, I love saying alkies love the payoff, you know, and the payoff is I was a really good son. You know, I buried both of my parents. I was with both of my parents when they passed. You know, that was, it's, as you can tell, I'm like an emotional person, but to be with your mother when she passes, you know, and to be of service, you know, to my father as he failed in his health. I remember we large family. I remember going to see my father. So his health was failing. He had Alzheimer's, and we go to Florida two at a time. So this is one thing we figured out. Going down to Florida, and I said, Dad, I think I could borrow the car tonight. I'm just going to go to a big book meeting down in North Palm. So I'm down with my brother, and he calls me. It's like 10 o'clock. I go, what's up? He goes, where are you? I said, down in Daytona, down in Lauderdale, or whatever, in West Palm. He goes, you got to get home. And I go, why? He goes, Dad is freaking out. I go, about what? He goes, that you have his car, and it's not back yet. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, well, we learned the lesson. Never borrow Dad's car again. I felt like I was in... My dad wouldn't let me borrow his car in high school. And but to be available for his father, for my father, as his health failed, like, I would do anything for him. And that could never be possible unless I did this. Like, I would shower him and take care of him. I got to take care of him. I did things that probably a lot of people, you know, it's no big secret, a lot of people in my family weren't really comfortable doing, but I would do anything for him. I mean, I remember saying, did you shower today? Nope. Well, guess what? We're like, nope, no option. Let's go. And it's given me a freedom that I could never do on my own as an alcoholic and an addict. It has given me so much strength and inspiration that, you know, would carry me on. Like, the amends is just a part, as we'll hear next, is like, it's just a part of the 10th step. It's about looking at my behavior, being responsible. These are words I never, responsibility was not in my repertoire as a young kid, let me tell you that. And it turned me from a boy into a man. It I wasn't psyched to speak in the men's big book group, but I can tell you this, I was probably the youngest member in that group for sure at that time. And when you own your stuff and you look people in the eye, your life's going to change when you admit your fault. That to me, I didn't realize the result of doing all this is humility. You know, owning your stuff today is, that was practice for the rest of my life. You know, do you know how many times I've made amends to my little daughter and all my, I've made amends to my kids so many times. And that stuff didn't happen in my house. What happened in my house is, what did you do wrong when you fell down the stairs? That shit has no place and never had a place in my home that I grew up with. It changes you. And the good news is, as I've passed this on to my kids, you know, all my kids, you know, they've all lived, they are better people as a result. And the last thing I'll say is, if you don't think it can affect someone's life, now my oldest son is he's an EMT firefighter, has a great job down in Chatham, Massachusetts. He's a paramedic. He sees a lot. He does a lot. And I love that kid. I love everything about him. I love all his faults, every his accomplishments. And he took my youngest, Savannah, aside. He goes, you know, he started talking about me in a positive way. We always had a great relationship. But he has told her things like, I wouldn't be the man I am unless your father taught me some of this stuff. So it's like, you know, it's easy to talk. This is easy. Talking about this stuff is the easy part. But trying to practice it and practice it and practice it and not, this is the way I grew up. This is one of the last things I'm going to say. I grew up like this. This is why we're going to do this. Y'all going to do this. And one thing that I learned from Dale said, you want to learn like this or do you want to learn like this? And that's what I do with my kids. I put my hand around their shoulder and said, we're going to try and do things a little bit different. You know, we're going to be patient, understanding, tolerant, loving everyone. And, you know, unfortunately, to the end of, you know, this horrific situation that I just went through, it showed. I mean, these kids, there was no bickering. There was no fighting. They don't give a shit about money. You know, they cared about, you know, what was important. And when you know, I could fail from today on, which, trust me, I'm not going to. I'm not going to fail at anything that I put my all into. But when I saw that and those kids come together as one, that's a successful life. And that wasn't me. I didn't do that. I listened to some drunk, brought me through the 12 steps, and try to not work this stuff, but live this stuff into my life and pass those spiritual principles onto these kids. I didn't force it on any of them. They didn't want to do it, no big deal. Just like I sponsor somebody. And all I can say is, it's like, I can't speak enough for this process. It's changed my life, and my job is to try to carry this message, not deliver it, because I've delivered it plenty. I've shoved many big books down many throats, and it is an ineffective way to carry a message. But working with drunks is easy. Doing the stuff at home, that's where it's difficult. And I'd like to say that I did pretty good with it at home more often than not. So good to be here. Thank you so much.